Yes, good afternoon. Welcome to the Wolf Whistle. We've got an afternoon recording today because the superstar that I've come to interview refused to leave his home. So I've had to travel the width of the country to go and meet him. He doesn't give many interviews, so we are highly honoured. 237 games for the Wolves, 14 goals, over 500 career games. There is only one, Jody Craddock. Jody, welcome.
Hello there. I was actually busy painting, so that's why I couldn't get away from that.
He was, because, as we all know, he's an artist now after being a footballer. Very lucky to have been good at two things, Jody. I'm not good at one thing, you're good at everything. But obviously, we all know you because you was a great player for Wolves. So we'll rewind the clock back right to the very, very start when you started out, because you... didn't come through the normal route, we should say, of professional football, where people start YTS Academy, etc. You was actually a student playing part-time football for Christchurch, was it?
Yeah, that was right. So at age 16, 17, I just played local football. Back in the day, I used to write to football clubs. And it was quite a long time ago, 30 years ago nearly. So you'd write to a football club, see if you get a trial, and I got a couple of trials. I think I got a trial at Yeovil, and I just wasn't good enough. I was at that age, I wasn't good enough. So I just, played local football. On a Saturday I started off at Holt before I went to Christchurch, and it was just like men's afternoon football, so that would have been at the age of 17. And then Sunday morning, I think I played pub football. Sunday afternoon I played for under 17s or under 18s at whatever age it was then. So I went from Holt, somebody spotted me, and then took me to Christchurch, which was in effect semi-pro. I don't know what you class as semi-pro, they're supposed to pay you. I didn't get a penny. But I wasn't bothered, it wasn't about the money, it was never about the money. I loved football, so I used to ride to play there every Saturday. I'd do about a 5 mile ride to get there so I could play, and then.
And how old was you really when you first started sort of playing football? Because originally you're from Redditch, is that right?
That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
And you, if you don't mind me saying, your mum and dad got divorced.
Yeah.
And then you went down to Bournemouth, was it?
Yeah, I moved to Bournemouth at 12. I started at 8, which, today's standards, is late now. I just loved football. I was always quite good. There's always players better than me. I was always quite good, but I just loved it. As a kid back then, you didn't have your phones, you didn't have computers, so I was just out playing football all the time. Or not just football. I might have been playing American football. I might have been playing tennis. I was always doing something constantly. So I think, the more you do of something, the better you get someday.
And obviously, I've seen the pictures. You was this long-haired student. Yeah. And what was you studying, by the way?
Well, I'd done GCSEs now. I was doing A-level. So I started off with art, obviously, geology and geography. So it's three A-levels, and so it's a two-year A-level.
So you could have ended up with some rock mover in Bournemouth, couldn't you?
A rock painter, Well, I gave up geography after the first year because three A-levels was too much. So I binned one off and just concentrated on the two, which was good. I passed two A-levels.
So then obviously you got your big chance. And how old was you when you got offered your trial at Cambridge?
So I was just before I turned 18, so I'd finished my A-levels. But first of all, halfway through my A-levels, Bournemouth wanted me to go. I had a couple of trials for Bournemouth. I went to train with Bournemouth first team because they wanted to try and get me into their YTS.
Who was manager then?
Tony Pulis.
Okay.
Yeah, so I know Tony Pulis. Hence the Stoke thing, which we'll probably cover later on. So I went and had a couple of trials there, and they liked me there, and they wanted me to come and do the YTS at Bournemouth.
Yeah.
I don't know, I must have had my head screwed on or something, because I was like, look, let me finish my A-levels, and then I'll come after that. I was thinking, I need to finish them, because I didn't think I was good enough as a player to forge a career, a 20-year career in football. I didn't think I was good enough. I thought, I need my A-levels. If I don't have my A-levels, then, what do I have if I don't make football, type thing. So, stayed on, did my A-levels. It was his brother that ran the YTS, and they said, okay, just give us a shout when you finish your A-levels, and literally rang him up at the end of my A-levels and said, oh, yeah, I'm Jody Craddock. You told me to give you a ring, and they just kind of went, Never heard of you. And I'm like, considering I played three or four games for their youth team.
No.
He never heard of me. So I'm like, okay, thanks for that. And then I just...
See ya.
So I thought, okay, I'll have a nice... You know, I've done my A-levels, and I thought, I'll have some time off now. I'll literally have a bit of time off before I have to even think about either getting a job or what's the next step. I just wanted that time off. It was literally days later, Cambridge rang me up and said, look, come down here for a trial. And then I think I had Barry Fry from Peterborough ringing the next day and go, don't go to Cambridge. They're shite. Come to Peterborough.
Brilliant.
And I'm like, no, you know, I'm Cambridge have asked me, I'm going to Cambridge for a trial. And there you go. I went down there and managed to get in.
So that was a massive decision for you because, look, when you're the age you was and there's a professional club knocking at the door and you're saying, hang on, I'm going to do my A-levels, that's a big decision to make. And yes, I know education's important in football now, but I couldn't see many players at that time turning it down.
No, and I don't... Looking back now, I don't know why I did, to be honest.
Because you could have effectively... With the greatest respect, shut the door on this whole chapter, couldn't you?
So I don't know why I did it. I can only think is that I didn't think I was good enough. And even at Cambridge, I didn't think I was good enough. You know, I was great in the bloody playground. Don't get me wrong, I was brilliant in the playground with my mates and not outside in
the
street.
Had you always been above average anyway?
Yeah, I think I was above average. But I think my work rate and my passion for it was like top, you know, that is what's got me for a whole career.
Well, Jody, by your own admission, we'll come to that, but you know, you have said you aren't the most skillful player. Saying that, when you play for the All-Stars,
it's a different ball game. It is different in the playground with your mates or playing five a side now or with the All-Stars. It's different, it's a different mentality when you're playing on a match day in front of 30,000 and you're a centre half. I ain't going to be taking people on because if I do that and I give that ball, you just keep it simple. It doesn't mean I can't do it. I just, I'd be silly to do it. So I never did it. So I didn't need that side in the game. I just, you teach yourself to do it the other way.
So Cambridge, how long was you at Cambridge for, Jody?
I was at Cambridge 4 years.
And then... that's obviously your apprenticeship. So your apprenticeship to football, really, in terms of what league would they have been in at the time?
So they'd have been first division, which would have been the old second, and then they got relegated. So it wasn't an apprenticeship. I went in at 18 as a professional.
Yeah, but I meant your apprenticeship to your effective career in football. This is where you had to do your grounding. So if you got it wrong there, at that level, it's game over.
Oh, completely. But, like I said, I didn't think I was good enough. So I'd literally, we'd have a day off in the week. You'd have Saturday, Sunday, which is a game Saturday. 9 times out of 10, you'd have Sunday off unless you had a midweek game, and then you'd have a midweek day off as well. I couldn't quite get my head round it at the age of 18, 19. I'm thinking, why am I getting how come I'm having a day off in the midweek? I'm thinking, I'm not good enough. I'm not in the first team. I'm in the reserve. I loved it. I absolutely loved the place. So I'd go in on my day off and I'd just kick the ball against the wall for hours and hours and hours. Kick a ball against the wall. And like hit targets and stuff for hours on end, and it really, really helped me out.
Did that improve massively?
Because I remember my first game I played for Cambridge. It was an away game. I come on as a sub. I was absolutely bricking it. I could always header. I could always tackle. Never an issue. But when there's so much pressure on me, there might have only been 4,000 or 5,000 in the crowd. But when it's a really tight pitch, it feels like 30,000.
Of course, because I bet you can see every face, hear every voice.
And I just remember my first pass I ever made. It was just an absolute panic pass. It came to me, I just kicked it anywhere, and it went straight to one of our players. And I was thinking, thank God for that, because I just...
So your first pass in professional football?
Would just kick it, and it went straight to someone's feet. I didn't even know where it was going.
Honestly.
And then the lad after, it was Steve Claridge, who went to his feet, and he came to me after and went, you didn't even mean to pass that, did you? I went, no, I didn't have a clue. I just kicked it as hard as I could. It went to you, so...
Brilliant.
But, yeah.
So, how did... Obviously, 4 years at Cambridge, so once again, you're cutting your teeth there. And you know, Cambridge that time, obviously, they used to play long balls, didn't they, a lot of the time, so...
Well, John Beck was there before I turned up. So, he's the kind of... he did the long ball. They'd grow the grass in the corner of the pitches, and they would literally hit the ball into the corners, and it would just hold up in the corners so they could get crossed.
So that was all planned.
Yeah, but But thank God I missed that era. And I came in at Gary Johnson, who I think was his coach at the time, John Bick's coach. So I came, oh no, Gary Johnson would have been maybe the youth team manager. And then he became manager, so he took me in. And yeah, Gary Johnson, then Tommy Taylor, Roy McFarlane.
And how did the when your career really started revving up, how did the move to Sunderland come about?
I've just managed to get my team. Oh, like I said, 4 years, so I wasn't in the first team all the time. The first year was, you know, I was building myself as a player, getting stronger, learning how to play with professional footballers, which is a bit of a jump from playing with club team, for, you know, players on a Sunday morning. And I went on loan to Woking, which was fantastic. So I played, you know, on loan there. And yeah, I'm just great. I think it was in towards the end of the first season, I managed to get a couple of games, and then the second season, I was in morning. So then, brilliant. Then I got in the team. How did the move happen? I don't know. You just get spotted. John Griffin was the scout that spotted me. He spotted me at Christchurch. He then took me from Christchurch to Sunderland.
Who was the manager at the time of Sunderland?
Peter Reid.
So, and they were in the Championship at the time?
Championship, yeah. I went up for a trial. So.
And what a huge, huge club, on and off the pitch. A fantastic stadium.
Yeah.
You must have thought, what, because, you know, although after 4 years in professional football, you understand now the game works, etc. But that move, even then, must have been huge.
That was big. You know, just before that, I'd spoken to somebody at Oxford. It was at that time, clubs looking at me. I'd had spoken to Oxford, and I just didn't feel that was right for me. So I turned that down. I don't know what's the matter with me, I'm turning stuff down. So I turned that down, and then Sunderland came in for me. Oh, and whilst the Sunderland thing was going on, I know Chelsea were interested.
Chelsea?
Chelsea were interested.
You heard it here first, guys.
Yeah, but... So they were like, oh, it's on the table, something's going to happen. And they come in and took Danny Granville instead. So they come in and took me, mate, who was the same age.
Don't tell me you'd Chelsea come knocking, you go, oh, I didn't know about this.
You'd
have walked to London.
No, but they took somebody else instead. So I was like, oh, okay. And then Sunderland were there. And come up here and have a trial. Brilliant, yeah. I loved it. I went up and had a trial for a week, and then I come back to Cambridge for another week or two, and then I'm like, yeah, it doesn't happen anymore, does it? Do you have a trial? You ever heard of players going for trials for a week or 2 weeks? Doesn't happen. I didn't even know it happened then, to be honest. Another trial.
And that's how life in football works, really, because once again, you're at Cambridge, you just know a few bad games, and all of a sudden, you can be dropping out the leagues, down the leagues. But the way your life flips as well, Jody, because you met Shelley, didn't you, in Bournemouth?
Yeah, at school.
So, you know, obviously, sadly, you know, we said your mum and dad got divorced. You was forced to move to Bournemouth. And really, everything happened down there, didn't it? You met Shelley, etc.
Yeah.
And Sunderland, one of the points, you know, I do want to touch on, a very, very sad moment in your life, was the tragedy of losing your little boy, Jake.
Yeah, yeah. Cot death, you know, one of those things, really, really tough time. How do you cope? You know, what do you do? The fans are amazing. The club are fantastic. You just kind of, I just get on with things. That's what I did. I was back training in 7 days. As crazy as that sounds, I couldn't just sit at home.
No.
And sit at home and do what? You know, time stands still. It was like slow motion. I just needed to get past the grieving, get past and get on. I didn't want to.
And how old was Jake?
Five and a half months.
Five and a half. I mean, you just, as a parent, for you, I just can't even imagine. And what must have been really difficult as well, obviously, it's your firstborn, and obviously you and Shelley are in another, you know, town miles away from your family. You know, if your family's in Bournemouth, you're literally the other end of the country. Did you feel quite isolated at times? And
I don't know. Do you know what? As bad as it sounds, it's not a bad thing at times, because how do your family grieve? Your family come round you and then they're all like really upset, and just kind of rolls on and makes things worse. So, you know, what's that initial, you know, that everybody comes up and sees you, and then you do need to get back. If you don't get back to reality as quick as you can, that stuff just festers and gets worse and worse and worse. So, you know, having the family slightly further apart did help because it meant we could, you know, get on and, you know, as ruthless as it sounds, you've got to get on with your life and just,
You know,
as it just never goes away and it's always something that will hold you back.
I know your family personally, Jodie, and if there's a family, you know, the close-knit family you've got with Shelley and your boys now, if there's a family that can get through it, it's you guys, because I know how strong you are and how loving you are and what a great basis for any relationship. But, you know, once again, it must have been... I remember you telling me one point, actually, when I was obviously very fortunate to be chairman of your testimonial, we went up to Sunderland on the train for the derby, and I remember we did speak about this, and you said that Shelley would come to training with you and sit in the car, wouldn't
she?
Yeah,
she couldn't
wait.
Kind of bear to leave me, so she'd come to training and just sit and wait for me, because, you know, I'd be going out whilst I'm with, you know, my teammates playing football.
Yeah.
You know, what did Shelley have to do? You know, she'd be sat at home kind of stewing, and so she just came with me and, you know, talked to the girls at the club and, so we both kind of got through that phase and then kind of...
Was football a release, Jodie?
Yeah, massively. I needed it. I needed to do something. I'd sit in the lounge and paint as well. You know, I just would, you know, football, obviously, when you're playing football, you just play football. I ain't got time to think about other stuff that's going on, because I'm just thinking, well, there's a football there. I need to pass that or do this or make that run. You know, same as painting. When I'm painting, I just sit there, look at the painting. Like, I need to do this here. And this here. So they are forms of release. And
That was your focus. And is Jake still laid to rest in
Bournemouth? Yes. Yeah, Ham Preston Church in Bournemouth, where me and Shelley got married.
Oh, right. Once again, I'm so, so sorry, you know, Jodie, it is such a sad story. At Sunderland, though, you did have, obviously, that terrible, terrible, but you had a lot of success on the pitch, didn't you? I mean, it was a very sort of triumphant time, wasn't it, really, in terms of the successes? There was promotion.
Yeah.
I mean, tell me about that time at the club with the, you know, playing at the stadium alight, the players.
I love Sunderland. It was fantastic. I love Cambridge. Don't get me wrong, I absolutely love Cambridge first and foremost. I've still got mates from Cambridge and I loved the place. It was a lovely place. The people were fantastic. And I was a young boy. You know, I liken football. I've always said football is like being at school with your mates.
Yeah.
But you don't have to do the work.
Yeah.
You can just go and play football in the play. That is how I felt. I was just with my mates playing football. And that's all it was. You know, I went to Sunderland and it was brilliant. The people are absolutely fantastic. No disrespect to any other people in the world, but I've never met nicer people in my life. The first thing I went up there and the people were just fantastic.
Thanks a lot, mate.
Did you used to live in Sunderland? So, you know, they're fantastic people. Considering the weather is absolutely dire, 99% of the time it's constantly windy.
Oh,
they're always happy and smiling, and it was a big club. I joined.
Huge.
Yeah, I joined the day. The Roca... You know, that closed down. Down, and they opened the stadium a lot. I signed with Kevin Phillips on the day the stadium light opened.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it was the start of something massive and new for Sunderland as well.
Yeah, it was brilliant. You know, I loved it. I got some good friends, which I still have them friends. My first season, I just kind of found my way and was getting up to the speed of, you know, playing now with professionals that were at an even higher level and, trying to understand Alex Ray's Scottish. You know, it took me about 4 months to understand Alex Ray, but now, you know, then you get to grips with it. And I think I think I might have got in the team halfway through my first season. And I think I even went to Wembley. I think that was the season. We went to Wembley and played at Wembley as well. We lost at the Wembley that game.
Was that, how disappointing was that?
Massively disappointing. I was next up to take a penalty, so I'm glad Mickey Gray missed it. I was absolutely bricking it. I was thinking, how am I going to take a penalty? How am I going to take a penalty?
How come they selected you, or did you just put
your hand
up? Oh,
it was going down the list. And
people were going, I ain't taking one.
Danny Duccio had already gone, I ain't taking one. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You're like a centre forward. You're not going to take a penalty, yeah. And then there's like me and Daz Williams thinking, oh no. And then, we weren't ready at that point, I don't think, to get promotion. And then the next season, we just romped the league. Absolutely romped
it. With the penalties, would you have just laced it? Is that what you'd have done?
Well, I'd already had it in my mind where it was going. I was going bottom left, bottom left. That's, you know, I always say to my kids when I think, don't change your mind. Pick a corner.
Yeah.
Don't change your mind. That is it. But I could see what the keeper was doing. You know, if I was right-footed going across the keeper, he was always going to the right. He was right-footed, he was diving right. Left-footed, he was diving, I think he was diving left. Whether this, what was happening, I don't know. But that's what I could see was happening. So every time a right foot went, he dived the right way. And I'm thinking, oh no, he's going to go.
He's going to save
but
it.
I can't change my mind. And oh, I can't no. change my mind. I think there's no way now I'm going to change my mind and put it in the other corner because...
So
you don't do that.
Thankfully, you didn't have to take one.
I didn't have to take one, thankfully. But
once again, with penalties, it's hero or zero, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, exactly. And bless Mickey Gray, he missed it. But
and he's a Sunderland legend.
He is an absolute Sunderland legend. He still is a Sunderland legend. And he was at the Wolves as well. So
does playing with better players make you a better player, Jody?
Yeah, it has to make you better. Because if it doesn't make you better... You're going somewhere else, you know, you're getting shipped off somewhere else. It's as simple as that. So, yeah, playing with better players. If you're that type of player, I always think I was that type of player that, you know, the better the standard I was in, the better I played.
Yeah.
You know, I was a learner. I would listen, I'd take things in, I'd learn things from the players around me. And, you know, I was good at that. I was never thinking, you know, never thought for one moment, oh, I'm better than you. You know, none of that stuff. I was always thinking, right, you know, what can I learn from you? What can you give me that you know that's going to make me better all the time, throughout my whole career?
Did you see, just alluding back to a point that you made a bit earlier about, you know, it is fun playing football, obviously, and doing your career is amazing. Did you actually see it as a job? Because some players see it as a job. I mean, did you see it as a job?
No, not at all. Don't get me wrong. As you get older and you have children and you think, you know, and your priorities are different because you have a house and you have mortgages and cars and all this. You know, malarkey going on. It slightly changes, but as a kid, I just wanted to play football. I was on absolute pennies at Cambridge. I'd have no money at the end of the month. I'd have to borrow money off people.
I mean, I've been asking the players this. What I won't ask later in the career, obviously. But what sort of money was you on at Cambridge to start with?
Oh, I was on, including. So I was on £60 a week, and then but they pay my digs for me.
So how the hell do you live in this massive house and £60 a week?
Shelley must have had a good
house. So £60 a week and they pay you digs?
Yeah, they paid me digs for me and I had £60 left. But that, you know, it went nowhere.
Oh, of course.
And the manager would be like, Gary Johnson would be like, you know, £60 a week, that's a lot of money that is. And I'd be like, you know what, probably it's a lot of money. And he'd like convinced me it was a lot of money. And you know, that's brilliant. Yeah,
so you actually conditioned you to think.
Convinced me to think that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd get to the end of the month and I'd have to borrow a tenner off someone and I'd be ringing Shelley at the phone box and I'd be like, right, me 50p's running out. It's all I've got left to last me to the end of the week.
The thing is, with professional football, people, yes, at that level, I get it's different. And, you know, it's obviously that's way before the Premier League days. But... You know, it's not as glamorous as people think, is it?
No,
yes, it's
no.
great to be playing in front of 5,000 people, but you've still got the same challenges financially as the working man. In fact, there's people in that crowd who are on more money than you.
Yeah, everybody in that crowd was on more money than me.
This steward was on more money than you.
Yeah, but I loved the game.
Yeah.
And I would have played for nothing.
Of course.
I absolutely loved it. That's what I was in on all my day offs, you know. I'd have played for nothing. It was brilliant. But then I kind of, yeah, the flip side of coin, say I'd have got loads of money at that age. Would I then have... Oh, I just still think I would have been the same person that really worked harder and harder and harder. Yeah, but say you're getting thousands and thousands of pounds. Do you kind of rest on your laurels a bit and not quite give as much effort? I don't know, you know. I like to think I'm not that type of person. It would have never
affected
me. I was going
to say, I don't think you are that kind of person. The problem is with football nowadays, there's players in the Championship, I couldn't even name them, who are multi-millionaires.
Yeah.
There's players who are in Premier League squads who are nowhere near the first team and may never play professional football because they're already millionaires. They've had good contracts since the age of 16, 17, and their hunger and ambition does go and their drive does go.
And then they make the wrong footballing decisions based on, well, I don't need to go there because I've got all this money and I don't need to go on loan to... You know, a lower division club because I don't, you know, I've got the money.
And
I agree.
for you, Jodie, I don't think it's ever been about money anyway, but I think it comes with the territory on the fact that you were successful, you'd worked hard at Cambridge, you got the move to Sunderland, and that was obviously a 300k transfer, then obviously come the move to Wolves. But that's down to your hard work and determination. You wasn't contract chasing, you know, you wasn't saying, right, I'm, you, basically, because you worked so hard and you was good at what you did, that you know, you never set out at Cambridge to think, right, you know, I'm going to be a successful footballer, I want this house. It doesn't work that way,
no,
does it?
No. We'd always, me and Shelley had always said, look, if we get some out of football, we pay for our house, and that is it. If we can pay off our house, it's been a success.
Yeah.
So if we can get mortgage free by the end of my football career, we're happy.
Wow.
Which we did.
Brilliant. So then obviously the big move come. So instead of all these great people at Sunderland, you then come to God's country.
Yes.
Signed for the Wolves in 2003, £1.75 million. It was the season we just got promoted to the Premier League. And if I'm right, Jodie and Lescott obviously got injured and you was the replacement for Jodie. And so how did the move come about to Wolves and how did you first hear about it?
We got relegated. We were just on the verge of relegation. We had some fantastic seasons at Sunderland. We were seventh in the Premiership, 2 years running, and then it started to slip a bit, and we got relegated. So it was one of them. They had to get rid of a few players, and I was one of those, in a sense that, you know, you don't never know what your mates earn in, you know, money wise. You just never talk. It's just a thing you just never talk about.
In the changing room.
Yeah, just never talk about it. You don't want to know what your mates on, because if your mates on more money than you and you're playing better than them, you're going to be quite annoyed. So you never talk about money.
Just to interject, sorry, that football's a career like no other, because if you worked in a factory or an office and someone's doing the same job, they get the same money. In football, you can have someone who's not in the team, who's probably not as good as the player who is in the team, and he can be on twice as much money.
Yeah, and I've seen it, and it's, yeah. So that's why people never talk about, well, whether it's changed since I've been away 5 years,
so
I doubt it.
So you didn't know what any of the player in the dressing room, what contract
you don't
was
know
on.
What was in the newspaper, what they speculated.
Yeah, or if one of them's rocking up in a Ferrari.
Exactly.
And then someone else is in a Mondeo.
Exactly.
You think, hang on a sec, what's going on here?
Yeah.
So, you didn't have a Ferrari, did you, Jodie?
No, never had a Ferrari. Mickey Gray had a Ferrari. He'd drive out the training ground. Drive out the training ground. It'd be the loudest Ferrari you've ever heard. And he'd go belting down the road. And you'd hear him stop at his house. It was so loud. He lived about half a mile away from the training ground.
Was that Sunderland?
And he'd stop.
Was that Sunderland, was he? And Sunderland, obviously, it's not the most affluent of areas.
No.
So, you got Mickey Gray
flying
around in a Ferrari. And then he goes and misses a penalty at Wembley. Oh, dear. So, yeah, so sorry, how did you come to be a move to Wolves?
Oh, right, so, yeah, we got relegated. So, yeah, I think it was Dave Jones at the time wanted me down there. So I came down and had a chat with him, and this was as simple as that. No trial this time. I didn't have to come for a trial.
Yeah.
You know, I'd been doing well at Sunderland, playing well. Even though we got relegated, I was a captain, I was still playing well. So yeah, it was nice. It was kind of, you know, I've been through tough times at Sunderland personally.
Yeah.
Not you know, not on the pitch. You know, 'cause I love my playing my football there. And it was kind of like, yeah, okay, maybe it's just a fresh start from a personal point of view as well, to kind of come away and be closer to some of the family as well.
Well, that's it, 'cause it was moved obviously back to the Midlands where you were sort of born. Did it feel like coming home in respect of obviously being born in Redditch and coming back to the Midlands?
A little bit, yeah. It meant, you know, I was nearer my family, which was nice, because it was like a right trek for them to get up to, you know, the my family in Bournemouth. It was a 7-hour drive up to Sunderland, or anybody in, you know, in Birmingham, it was a 4-hour drive. So yeah, it was nice to come home, and it was a lot warmer down here.
Yeah,
which I forgot
about. Flipping it, Wolverhampton warm.
It was a lot warmer. Yeah.
That was a great era for me, the season we first got promoted to the Premier League, the playoff team, obviously. You obviously come the first Premier League season.
Yeah.
Did you think Wolves strengthened enough, maybe? Because it was a difficult season, wasn't it?
It was very difficult. We weren't good enough.
Yeah.
That is the underlying factor. We were not good enough.
Yeah.
As a team, individually, different, you know, kettle of fish, but as a team, we were not good enough for the Premiership, and that's why we got relegated.
The investment, I mean, there were signings. There looked to be some good players on paper, but like you said, I didn't think they all gelled, and I think, you know, it just seemed there was a few panic signings as well.
Yeah.
And I know Dave Jones, it's not Dave's fault, he didn't have nowhere near enough money to spend and compete in the Premier League, but it must have been frustrating for you guys, you know, because obviously you're coming to a Premier League club, straight away back to the wall, you think, hang on, we're going to be in the Championship
next
year.
Yeah, it was tough. It was really tough. But yeah, it's hard for any manager. He didn't have lots of money to spend. So what do you do as a manager then? How do you, you know, what do? You have to find, you know, gems, don't you?
Yeah.
You have to find little gems, a bit like what Mick McCarthy did, finding Coates and Jarvis and, you know, players like that.
And who was the standout player that 03-04 season? For me, Henry Kamara looked a hell of a player. I mean, he was putting balls in top corner from 25 yards.
Yeah, he was good. You know, I liked him. He was a good player. But all I remember about him is, not remember, was he, did he leave after that season? I think I remember he left after that season.
We all had the manners, please stay, Henry.
And he kind of bowled up in pre-season for one day, and that's all I remember about him, as bad as that sounds.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I think he wanted to, as soon as we relegation was confirmed.
So where did he go from there?
I'm asking you.
Where did he go from there?
I asked the question.
Was he
Celtic? No, I think he went to Celtic. Was it Wigan? Anyway, we'll Google that after, Jody. Don't put me on the spot. I'm not reading from a script, honest. So, I want to fast forward it a bit now, because you've just touched upon a player, Carty and Jarvis. I did hear on another podcast an interview with Carl Henry, and he did say that he doesn't feel that Wolves got the recognition that they should have done from that 08-09 championship winning season. To be honest, I do agree with him to a certain degree.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a fantastic season. You and Carl obviously took it in turns on the captaincy in terms of throughout the season. I mean, what was that team like to be involved in?
It was brilliant. But I think, you know, I know where Carl's coming from. Mick McCarthy's got this team together when he's gone and found these, like I said, these gems, found these players, Kev Foley, Michael Cartley, Matt Jarvis, he's found these players, Sylvain Ebanks, Blakes, and brought them in together.
Yep.
And they have gelled so well.
Unbelievably.
You know, it's hard to do that. You know, Wolves weren't like they are now, where they've got lots and lots of money and can handpick pretty much whoever they want to come in and, you know, and you know they're coming in and doing a great job because, well, they cost so many millions. You know, it was different. You've got to bring these young players in, but, you know, Koch was at Southend. You've got to bring them in and you've got to turn them into a footballer. As you know, no disrespect, a footballer of a standard to get promoted in the Championship. And Mick did it, and he did a fantastic job, and it was an awesome team to play in. And, you know, we did an interview, I think we, not about a month or so ago, and I knew it was going to be about this season, so I watched the video. It's the first time I watched the video on that season, and you know, players like Sylvain Ebanks, like just stood out a million miles.
Unplayable,
weren't
they? How
good he was. It was scary.
But I think there wasn't really a weak link in that team. You couldn't say, well, they could strengthen a fullback. They could do it. There wasn't really a weak link. I think everybody looked strong. And had it helped that you'd worked with Mick? Because you'd worked with Mick at Sunderland, obviously.
Only for weeks. Just a matter. He came right at the end of the season. So I didn't really, I didn't really know Mick other than for 2 weeks at the end of the season or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I've always said Mick was the best manager I've ever had the privilege to work with, and
because when Mick first got the job at Wolves, there had been a bit of an exodus, and I think he was turning up to the first training sessions, and he was trying to contact Paul Ince, I believe, and you know, he didn't know whether these players were coming back, and so he literally had to pick the club up and the team up by the scruff of its neck.
Yeah.
So I do agree. You know, I do agree with Carl that I don't think it did get enough recognition, because, like you said, it was a great season, wasn't it?
It was. It was. And like I said, from what he had to do that job, you know, and the players he brought through, and how they jailed, and you know, these, you know, yeah, Chris Maluma, he scored loads of goals, him and Sylvain up front, but you had Andy Keogh just kind of waiting in the wings for when one of them weren't quite on it. He was in, and he'd be scoring goals as well. Everybody was happy to just do their little bit, and I got injured in that first half of the season, but I was back after Christmas, and, you know, it was brilliant.
But that for you, was probably the pinnacle of your time at Wolves in terms of, obviously, the success, the way you was playing. But obviously, a couple of seasons before, 2007, you're shipped out to Stoke on loan.
Yeah.
Now, by your own admission, I think you'll agree that you probably thought it was the end of the road, didn't you?
Oh, I definitely thought it was the end, yeah.
Why did you get shipped out, Jody? Was it form, was it all?
I don't... It's one of them things, isn't it? I've never any... I know there's a song about me, but there's...
We'll come to that, don't worry. We're not letting you get away with that.
Even that first season when we got relegated... My first season when we got relegated, you know, I didn't think to myself, God, I'm playing really, really bad here.
Yeah.
We just were as bad as a team, but I didn't think I'm playing really, really bad. You know, you've got to be positive as a player and you've got to always look forward of what's coming. And it's one of them things, you know, I suppose as a defender, centre-half, there's always competition, isn't there?
Yes.
You brought Darren Ward in, I think, maybe, brought him in. Which he obviously preferred him to me at that point. So he sent me out to Stoke. And by the way, I love Stoke. It was absolutely brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
I knew Tony Pulis, hour down the road from here. And I loved it. And I was ready to sign because I thought, yeah, excellent. You know, I'm back. I'm happy. I'm playing.
Did you enjoy it? Because you played 4 games at Stoke.
Yeah.
And you reunited with Tony Pulis.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
I really enjoyed it, yeah. And I was happy to go and sign there. And it was one of them. I think we played... I was on loan at Stoke. I think the Wolves then played Stoke at Stoke's, you know, the Britannia. And I think Stoke might have beaten them. And I think after that I came, they were like calling for me to come back. And I came back and, the rest of the history. I had another, whatever, 5 years or whatever after that.
So, yeah, so obviously you think going to Stoke. On the basis it was on loan, the door was still open. But obviously then you got back to Wolves and you know your career better than I do clearly, but I think that was then the best football of your career. So you've really come back from when it looks to be all over. Then there's the song, obviously, and he won Jody Craddock.
Yeah,
he used to be, but now he's all right. You see that as a, obviously, and it is a backhanded compliment.
Yeah, of course, you know, it's a song. If you get a song about you, unless it's a really, really bad song,
yeah,
it's good, you know, it was good, you know, that, you know, they make
it. Where did you first hear that, Jody?
I don't know, it must have been at the Mullen. I can't even remember it. I must have been on the Mullen. It wouldn't have been an away game, I wouldn't have thought.
And when you hear these songs, obviously it does boost you, but when you, the first time you ever heard that, you heard the words, what you said, yeah, hang on a sec.
You actually thought I was shy. Oh,
geez, yeah, and you just focusing on that point. Now. Oh, that's all right.
Oh, you're right.
I think purely...
You must like me to sing a song about me now.
Look, it's a play on words, it rhymes. And look, one of my favourite ever games, and I've said this, and it's still to this day, October 2009, so you'd been shipped out to Stoke on loan, you come back, we'd obviously had that great 08-09 season, you captain, we're back in the Premier League, we're playing Stoke away, we're 2-0 down at half-time, we're not obviously playing that well, you know, you think Stoke, you think, you know, you're expecting something from the game, and we're 2-0 down at half-time. Up steps Jody Craddock, 2 goals. I mean, I was there, and I just, what was that like to?
Great. Absolutely great. You know, to score a goal anyway. I'm not, you know, I'm a centre half. You don't score many goals, so when you do score a goal, it's like amazing. It's that amazing, you know, amazing feeling. You know, when a centre forward's on his 30th goal of the season.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. The excitement he's getting of me scoring a goal at Stoke as a centre-half. So, you know, I used to love scoring goals. I'm sure one of them was offside.
Well, obviously, 14 for Wolves. Oh, yeah, the one. Oh, VAR would have ruled that out.
Yeah, but it's too late now.
That we'd have lost 2-1 that game. But, I mean, they say don't celebrate against your former club, but I bet you couldn't help it, could you? I mean, I know you was only alone at Stoke.
How do you not celebrate?
Of course.
How can't you... You know, I don't... Sometimes players don't celebrate out of respect for, you know, things, but I just you know, you just can't hold it in. You just can't hold it in. It just comes out. I've got to celebrate.
You never went into that game thinking, if I'm going to score,
no.
Let alone score twice.
I'm thinking, I hope I do score. Yeah, yeah. I'm playing for the Bulls. I'm not playing for Stoke. I want to score. I want to win the game. I'm not thinking, oh, I used to play for these. Let's. I hope I don't score. I hope we don't beat them. I'm thinking, we need to win this game. Yeah, if I score, that's just a big bonus on top of it.
So that year for you, you was obviously player of the season as well, Jody. So, I mean, once again, you know, you're going out on loan, you think it's the end, and all of a sudden, Phoenix and the Flames. So was that it was a great season for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I scored, I think I might have scored 5 goals in 5 consecutive
yeah.
game or something.
You're
like
going to mention the Bradford one in a minute, aren't
you? No, that was before.
Oh, no, yeah. That was a hell of a goal.
So, yeah, brilliant. It was, do you know what? When things work right, they work right. I just always trained hard. It was never like, oh, what's happening here? You know, how come I'm playing good? I just always trained hard. I always trained like I'd play on a Saturday. I always went in the gym early in the morning and finished off my gym work at the end of training. You know, I always prepared right. I always ate the right kind of foods.
Well, you still do, don't you? I mean, you still look after yourself now.
It's kind of in me now, so that, yeah.
I do. So it's, because some people, let themselves go, but you've maintained, obviously, your physique. I mean, you could still play now.
Yeah. Could well probably come to that in a bit, but, you know, I could have, after I retired, I could have still played. But the thing was, injuries, can I get through a season without an injury? You get an injury, it knocks you back. I don't think I can get through without injuries. That's the issue, injuries. And I have a bit of a funny back leg thing going on, which just sets my nerves off.
But being married to a physio helps, doesn't it?
Do you know what? I reckon she kept me in the game another 4 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, definitely. She knew my back inside.
So your wages was literally going into her back. That's Shelley's bank, that's 4 years then, wasn't it? It's all your work.
She was brilliant. She kept me in the game. So.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
So, quite bittersweet, really. But your last goal for Wolves was May 2011 against Sunderland away.
Yeah,
I was actually at that game as well.
Celebrated as well.
How
can you not celebrate? I celebrated.
Brilliant. Yeah. And look, I don't think any supporter in that stadium, any Sunderland supporter in that stadium, would have begrudged you with that after, you know, what happened at Sunderland. And your last game, not just at Wolves, your last game in professional football was the 4th of December 2011. All this from memory, Jody.
Yeah, of course.
Against Sunderland at home. So it's almost like your career almost goes sort of full circle.
Yeah.
And right at the end of your time at Wolves, it was Stala Solbakken that let you go. I mean, just tell me how, you know, the conversation and, you know, basically how you found out.
Well, I got injured in that Sunderland game. Pulled my hamstring, and I think that must have been towards the end of the season. So around this time, and coming back from injury, and then Toby got diagnosed with leukemia, so it was a bit of a nightmare of a time. But I'd got back to fitness, and my hamstring was fine, and Mick McCarthy got the sack. TC was like, look, if I get the manager, I'm signing you straight away. I'm like, brilliant, please get the manager's job. But he didn't. Solbakken come in, and so I saw Solbakken before the end of the season, and he says, "Yeah, come back for come back in a couple of weeks. You know, we'll have a look at you." I'm thinking, great, you know, I'm going through a lot of stuff in personal life again. I don't want to be going to other clubs and travelling and doing other things.
Well, Toby's
having treatment in Birmingham, and you know. I felt like Wolves is my club. They understand where I'm at with it, and they, you know, they've been really good. I come back to pre-season. I was as fit as I'd ever been. I did all my tests. You do all these VO2 tests, everything. I did them with Tony Daly. I was fitter than I'd ever been. I was at the age of 35, maybe 30. It might have been 36, stroke 37. I was fitter than I'd ever been. All my results come back perfect, and I'd had one day at training. And which was just running, didn't even get the balls out. I might have got the balls out for 10 minutes. And I went and I thought, right, they're going to Ireland at the weekend. They're going on a pre-season tour. I'll go and see him. Right. And I was like, right, my son's got leukemia. So if I ain't going to have a chance, I ain't going to Ireland.
Yeah, of course.
What, you know, I'm not going there while he's in hospital and you're... And,
of course.
You know, I said, I ain't doing that. And he just went, no, I don't want you.
As blunt as that?
Yeah, I don't want you. I'm sorry, you know. I could have laid him out in front of the table. I could have absolutely tore his
head off.
So he
literally just said, you know...
No, blunt as that, I don't want your hands, all right. And I just walked out.
So I remember you saying the drive home, you was really upset, weren't you?
I was absolutely devastated. I had to go and then... I trained in the morning because I didn't feel I could then go and tell people, look, this is it, I'm done. So I was going and trained in the morning. I told Tony Daly, I said, look, Daz, if you're doing any running at the end of training... I ain't doing it. He's just got rid of me. I'm not doing the running. I'm just, that'll do. Yeah. I play football and I ain't running. We didn't do any running that day. So I did that, and then I had to tell the boys. I was in tears in the other change room with Paul Berry. I was in tears. He must have thought, what a soppy arse.
No, not at all.
And I think this bloke's just ruined the end of my career, and I'm as bitter as they come about it. But it is one of them things. And I drove home, and Jez Mox, he rings me up and says, oh, what's going on? You know, I've heard they'd let you go. I'm thinking, hold on. If you've just heard they've let me go, you should have maybe signed me then before we came in. And I would, no joke, Chase, I'd have signed for pennies. I would have signed for pennies.
Yeah.
Obviously not literally pennies.
Yeah.
Because, but, you know, there's...
But if they'd have offered you a reasonable wage...
You could have made me the lowest pay player in the club, and I'd have took it.
Wow.
And I'd have took it to play at Wolves for another year.
And I know that and can see that. Sometimes you do want the decision to be on your terms, don't you? Especially at the end of your career.
Yeah.
You want the decision to be on your terms where you can say, look, you can announce at Christmas, finish at the end of the year. Career's been great to me. But for someone to just come in, and that is complete disrespect, really, for just to say.
He didn't even know anything about me. He didn't, you know, he didn't know where I was at with my career. He didn't know nothing about me. And he just made that decision. No, I don't want it. And he brought some foreign lad in who didn't even play.
Yeah,
and he got relegated.
So, you've touched upon it, really. You've had that terrible, terrible, terrible tragedy, undescribable what happened in Sunderland. And you know, everyone has, don't say luck, but everyone has terrible things that happen to them in life. I get it. Then Toby gets diagnosed with leukaemia.
Yeah,
I remember once again, we was on that train journey. It was a long train journey, so we were talking about everything in the end. But I remember saying to you, you know, did you ever think, why us as a family? How you know, I mean, how did you hear about Toby getting, I mean...
We had a virus. We thought he had a virus, so... And then he had a cold, he just couldn't shake it off. Another thing, he had a tiny little nose bleed. I was thinking, that's a bit odd, it's not stopping. Shelley took him down to Bournemouth to see her parents for a weekend, and he just woke up complaining of leg pains. And if you know a 2-year-old kid, they don't wake up complaining of leg pains. Shelley thought, you know, she was a physio.
Yeah.
She knows a lot of stuff, so she's like, this ain't right. Took him to the hospital. They did blood tests, and there you go, leukemia. And I came down then.
How did Shelley tell you? Because obviously Shelley had gone down.
She didn't tell me. She said, come down, you know, he ain't very well. I had to send him to hospital. And I then drove down. And I don't think she wanted to worry me on the drive down.
Of course not.
And they just said at the hospital, I'm thinking, you know what? I'm thinking, what the hell's leukemia? I don't even know what leukemia is. They said this. And then
you'd obviously heard of it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know what it was. I didn't know it was cancer. And I'm like, oh. And then when they told me, I'm like, oh, God, no. You know, how'd you deal with this?
And straight away, it must be bringing back all the other memories. And you must be thinking, oh, I can't, I just, you know.
I'm thinking, how long is he going to live? My first thought is, how long is he going to live? I'm thinking, I can't put up with this.
Of course.
But then I thought, well, we're quite lucky because the leukemia he had a 98% chance of success. So he had the best one you could get.
Yeah.
It was a long course of treatment. It was hard, really hard work for him, not, you know.
Yeah. But for the family, Jody, I mean, yes, poor Toby, of course, unimaginable. But the whole family, once again, you're being dragged through the mill. It's just awful. Really, really awful.
Yeah, it was crap.
And you got two other boys, haven't you? And they don't want to see their little brother going through it. And it must have been such a sad time. And, you know, I'm just so glad I've seen him recently, and he's so healthy now, isn't he?
Oh, he's brilliant. He's an absolute warrior. He's absolutely brilliant, yeah.
And you wouldn't even know, would you?
You look at him and you wouldn't have a clue. You know, he's come through 3 years of treatment, then you have 5 years of remission. He's literally got till July. And what basically remission is that time at the end of treatment where it's kind of, you're not having treatment, just, they kind of tick you off, basically. Yeah. At the end of 5 years, they're just sick.
It's likely, you know, highly likely to come back. If it's going to come back, it's going to come back within that period. Yes.
And after that, it's, you know, they're like, yeah, great, you're fine.
So
he's got like till the summer, then that's past his remission. And he's doing fantastic.
Yeah, of course. So then you got given a testimonial by Wolves.
Yes.
Which was, I mean, once again, I'm humbled, by the way, to not only be named on the committee. I was so fortunate, just still to this day, so humbled to be chairman. as a team effort, we got 10,000 people to the stadium that day. I mean, what's it like, A, being given a testimonial, and B, what was that day like, especially with what you'd been going through?
Yeah, it was great. You know, I've always loved the Wolves, still do love the Wolves. The people, they've always been really good to me. It's just a way for me to say thank you. And then, you know, thinking back now, the lads that I had turned up to, like, we had a testimonial dinner, didn't we? And all the lads turned up for that, and then all the lads came and played for me, and all the Sunderland boys came down. I think, well, that's really, really...
Come from all over the country.
I think that's absolutely brilliant, because you know how, you know, with the Wolves All-Stars, you know, I know it's a different scale, yeah, but you know how difficult it is to get a team, yeah, together.
Yeah.
And it was, you know...
It's where we got you.
And it was quite... And it's a bit of a stress getting players. And,
yeah.
But I think in Berlin, they've all come... You know,
what a turnout on the day. And there was fantastic. Even supporters coming down from Sunderland. I mean, it was such a great, great year to be involved in with all the events. And we had the training day, and, you know, we done the art exhibition. And it was such a great, great time to be involved in. And obviously, Toby was still undergoing treatment, wasn't he, at that point? Was he, or was he just finished?
Yeah, I don't know. I think he would have just probably been at the end of his treatment. Yeah.
So I remember, obviously, he was very, very generous in donating some of the money from the proceeds to testimony to Birmingham Children's Hospital, because of how they'd helped, yeah, and how they'd really sort of saved his life. So it must have been, you know, a really nice, fitting tribute to the, yeah, end, because he come on, didn't he, and took a penalty and scored?
They did. They all took a penalty, didn't they?
They did.
Which was good. So, yeah, you know, a lovely day.
Brilliant.
Which hopefully they'll never forget. Well, they won't forget. And,
no.
Yeah, one I won't forget either.
So, obviously, Jody is good at everything, as we know. So, not only are you, obviously, you've had a great career in professional football, 20 years. You're also very, very good at art. So, when did you first pick up a paintbrush, and why, really?
Well, I always liked drawing as a kid. I think my dad would draw a little bit. You know, he wasn't an artist. My uncle would draw a little bit. He wasn't an artist. So I just liked drawing. I think, thank God I didn't have a phone back then or anything like that, because I might not have gone into it. So I just always liked drawing. So then when I went to Cambridge, I'd still just do pencil drawing, because I thought, like, I could only afford a pencil and a bit of paper. That's all,
yeah,
I could afford.
So you can't get all the oils in that?
No, I couldn't. So when I went to Sunderland, I had a little bit more money. And so I started to buy more materials. I used to watch a programme called... The Joy of Painting with Bob Ross, and he literally, yeah, this white bloke, big afro, had a little like squirrel sat in his top pocket on his shoulder, and he'd paint a landscape picture in oil in half an hour, and I'd be like mesmerised. I'm thinking, I can do that, that can't be that hard. I clearly couldn't do it, and I made an absolute mess trying to do it, but I thought, right, this is it, I'm going to teach myself how to do it.
So are you self-taught then?
Yeah, self-taught. From that moment, I was like, well, I'm going to teach myself to do oil paintings, and I did. I did A-levels at school, obviously, but they don't teach you oil painting, nothing like that. It was just one of them. The more I did, because I enjoyed it, the better I got.
And now it is a career, isn't it?
It is.
You know,
yeah,
it is a business. You know.
Yeah, it's my, yeah, it's what I do. It's my job. I say job in a loose term. You know, if I wasn't selling them, I'd still be painting. So it wouldn't, you know.
Yeah.
So it was a hobby that got out of hand, and I do it every. I was painting about 5 hours every day.
So although you've had, you know, some terrible things happen, you know, we spoke about very, very sad times, you've also been very lucky in one respect to be good at two things and make a living, because I suppose, like I said, it doesn't really feel like work, does it, sometimes?
It doesn't feel like work, but there wouldn't be the art without the football.
Of course.
I wouldn't, you know, art is a tough world to get into. Doesn't matter how good you are, it's a really tough world to get into. You know, with football, if you're an amazing footballer, there's a good chance you'll get picked up and,
yeah,
play, and you'll progress. You can be an amazing artist, that don't mean a thing. That don't mean you're going to sell a painting. So it's a tough work. It's not kind of one I'd really recommend, unless, you know, I don't know. It's not one I'd recommend, just purely because art on its own would not, you know, it's quite sporadic. I'll sell a,
yeah,
few, I won't sell a few.
Yeah,
sell two or three, and I won't sell nothing. You know,
yeah,
it's quite...
But you're not getting a guaranteed wage at the end,
no,
of the month. And do you think, being a professional footballer, you know, at such a high level, do you think that give you a platform once again to be recognised, and, you know?
Yeah, it does help. It helps in the sense that, you know, people would want to... It's kind of... It's two ways, really. So it helps, yes, open a few doors. Oh, he's a footballer. Oh, let's have a look at his work. Oh, he can paint as well. But I've always felt at the end of the day, the work's got to sell itself. They're not going to buy, if the work's crap, they ain't buying it. They ain't, you know, people aren't stupid. If they look at something and it's no good, they ain't, but let's not, you know, I won't get into it because there's some rubbish out there that sells for a fortune. So I don't get into that.
I mean, obviously we wouldn't mention names, but I remember that art exhibition I come with you to in London, and there was that person selling these paintings, and me and you looked at them and thought that it was just literally, it was like my cooking, it was like mess on a plate. Wasn't it?
There you go. It's very subjective, so you can be the best artist in the world, doesn't mean selling a thing. Do you know what I mean? You might not sell anything.
Those paintings were like, obviously I don't even know a name, they were like £3,000 or £4,000.
I
said to you, if I walked past with a marker pen and put a line through that, no one would ever, you wouldn't even notice.
I agree. But that's the strange art world, and once somebody buys into something, it can snowball.
So you've also got a very talented family, but you've got Joe. Is he going to follow your footsteps then? Because I know he plays football as well. Is he going to follow in your footsteps as a footballer or as an artist?
I don't know. I don't think he's got the drive to be a, he doesn't, you know, he's a good little player, but I don't think he has the drive and determination to be a footballer. Yeah. I had drive and determination. That's all I had, drive and determination. I forced my way, you know, through my career, you know, by working really, really hard. He doesn't have that drive and determination. So will he become a footballer? I doubt it, because that bit isn't there. He's a very good artist.
He's sold his work, hasn't he?
He's sold his work. He must have sold 5 or 6 pieces and made it.
He's any more than you.
Exactly. But I have to sit, you know, because he's at the age he is, and he's sold his first piece at 9 years old for £180, and it was brilliant. I have to sit.
Please tell me you put it in a trust fund for him.
I think he's sold and bought rubbish with it.
Bought sweets.
Probably. But it's one of them. So he ain't at the stage where he can. But then after that, he sold 2 paintings at the age of nothing. Age of 9. I look at Toby, and he's 10. I think he couldn't paint a thing. So I think if he just stuck with it and been really determined, he could have been anywhere now with his art. But, you know, he didn't have that determination. I'm not going to force him to paint. I ain't going to force him to play football. I just want them to do what they want to do. But he is really good. He isn't at the stage where he can just go off and do that standard on his own. I have to sit with him and help him. But he's, you know, he's going doing his mocks at the moment. I think he's a bit more money orientated.
All right.
So he wants to do a painting so he can go and buy something.
Oh yeah. So he's painting that to sell. He ain't painting that. Yeah.
He ain't painting it because he loves painting, which for me ain't really the right reason. But I suppose everybody has. You have different reasons for everything, don't you? You know.
But to be honest, you know, if, when you're selling paintings for a few hundred quid at that age,
that's
then
great, isn't it?
It's, like, you're gonna
think rich, ain't you, at that age? If you're rich, sold one for 250 quid. You're rich if you're that age, but you know, from a painting.
And so, and Luke plays a lot of football, doesn't he?
They all play football. Yeah, Luke plays football. He's 13. He's at that age where he's very, very mouthy at the moment.
Oh dear.
I want to knock his head off in the game.
Oh yeah, you manage the team, don't you, Jody?
I manage the team, so he's very, very mouthy. And
something like Luke.
So it can be a bit. He can push my buttons a little bit.
Yeah.
That's the fun of it. And Toby and Toba. So I manage Luke and Joe's team, and Toby plays for a different team, and they're the best team out of the three of them. They're absolutely brilliant. So
brilliant.
I happily stand back, don't get involved. I'll just say to him after the game, oh, you know, if you do that, you know, it's great, and I can just stand back and just not get involved. And the managers are brilliant and they do a great job, so you know, it's nice to just stand and watch for once, as opposed to being in
and bringing the argument home when
exactly,
he's
coming, which is, you know, you've got to learn when you do kids football not to bring it home and start, and start moaning in the car. But you know, I have good reason to do so.
Yeah,
it's on the blue. So
brilliant. And you've got another interest which probably not many people know about. You have got an interest in the paranormal.
I do. As strange as this may sound, it all started a couple of years ago. On a drunken night out, when one of the parents from the football team was like, right, let's just go and do a ghost hunt. And there's some Drakelow tunnels near me. They've been there forever, and I didn't even know they existed. And there's like these 3-mile-long tunnels which date back to the war.
Was that the one I'd come with you to?
That was it, which were, you know, full of ghosts. And we were like, right, voila, let's go and do it. A drunken night out, right, and I was like, absolutely crapping myself. And yeah, I've just been hooked ever since.
You have been hooked,
yeah. I've been hooked ever since. And I now kind of work for them at weekends.
So now Jodie works as a ghost hunter at Eightlow Tunnels on a weekend. And sometimes you get some Wolves fans rocking up, don't you?
Yeah,
and they go, looking at what you're doing here.
There's always a Wolves fan everywhere. So yeah, they'll walk past me and they'll be like staring and oh, you're Jodie Crowe. They just don't expect to see me in that environment. Yeah. But
so it's something you really enjoy, because I remember the first one I went to with you, because I've been to a few with you, was that Drake Low Tunnels, and I remember Amy was away at the time, so I come down on my own. I remember absolutely bricking myself. I've been talking to ghosts all night, and when I got home, I got all the dogs upstairs in bed with me, all the lights on, telly's on full blast, and I was shitting myself because Amy was away.
But that's it. You get hooked, and seen things and heard things which would, you know, could blow your mind.
Brilliant. Well, listen, Jodie, it's been amazing talking to you. Obviously, you've had such a varied life and career. It's been amazing. I want to personally say thank you for three things. Obviously, I went through a tragedy myself, and during that time, you know, I was beside myself, and you did three things for me. One, obviously, you let me part your testimonial committee, which I'll never forget. Two, the first Christmas I was on my own, you invited me for Christmas dinner, and I will never, ever, ever forget that. And I stopped over, and we had a lovely night with your family, and I know you're a private person. And thirdly, you took me on holiday to Crete. And, Jodie, honestly, it means so much to me, so I want it on record now. You are an absolute legend. You're a gentleman, and I want to thank you from my heart from what you've done for me as well.
My pleasure. You do things like that for mates, don't you?
Well, you're a top man. So I hope you've all enjoyed listening. What a great podcast. We're going to be on iTunes soon, the Apple podcast, because I'm not very good technically, but I did manage to fathom it yesterday, I think. So we're going to be on it soon. If people want to look and view and purchase your art, Jodie, what's your website?
You can go on my web. If you just Google Jodie Craddock, you will find it. It's usually my Facebook page, Jodie Craddock Art on Facebook. That or Instagram, and you Google it, you'll find it. It's usually the place, and you can just contact me directly, and
brilliant.
We can do a deal.
Brilliant. Jodie, thanks for your time.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Pleasure.